What if the world was different?
Science fiction is usually utopian or dystopian, either unrealistically good or unbelievably bad. There doesn't seem to be much in the middle.
But what if we looked at science fiction differently? What if we instead looked at a realistic world?
A believable world.
This is the world of Bellatopia.
In this episode of Bellatopia...
Among the many missions that came out of the Apollo Applications Program, one of the most amazing was the Venus flyby mission. Imagine using the same Apollo technology that brought us to the moon for a mission to fly by the planet Venus. Humans traveling to another planet in our solar system. In real life, funding for this mission never materialized. It wasn't even close. Yes, there was some actual planning that went into a proposed mission, and some early plans were created, but no serious program was budgeted. Given the significant budget cuts that occurred in Project Apollo, it didn't really even have a chance. That was in the real world. But this is not the real world. In Bellatopia, there was a Venus flyby mission, nicknamed the Bicentennial Flyby. It happened, and it was successful. But it wasn't without its problems. The Christmas miracle saved the mission and the astronauts, but doomed the rest of the program. This is the Venus flyby mission. Welcome to Bellatopia. From the space program to high-speed trains.
From bridges to artificial intelligence.
From pop culture to politics and war to religion.
Bellatopia is about the world of what if.
What if different decisions were made in our history? Different priorities held by our leaders.
Different politics involved.
Let's see the world as it could have been, perhaps should have been,
and might still become.
Welcome to Bellatopia. In the last episode, we talked about the Apollo Applications Program and the future use of Apollo technology beyond its use in landing on the moon. During the late 1960s, one of the missions that was considered for the Apollo Applications Program was a flyby mission of the planet Venus. As we discussed previously, due to the lack of support from both the Johnson and the Nixon administrations, this mission never really was taken seriously. But there was some actual planning that went into this proposed mission. In fact, you can check out Wikipedia and other online sources, and you'll find information about what was proposed in the late 1960s for this trip. A high-level outline of a mission plan was created, and a link to that proposal is in the show notes. But this is Bellatopia. In our world, Johnson and Nixon did support the AAP program, and the Venus flyby mission was funded. This episode describes a significant variation from the initial plans that were created in the 1960s. Instead, it describes a trip that I believe is more in line with what would have actually occurred if we were allowed to invest in and create such a mission. In our version of the mission, the one that occurred in the world of Bellatopia, the mission was named Venus 1, and it sent two astronauts on a planned nearly 7-month round-trip mission and a flyby past and around the planet Venus. What follows is a fictional documentary about this flyby mission. This documentary takes place in the year 2040, 65 years after the mission took place. This documentary, titled Our World in Space, describes the Venus flyby mission in greater detail as a historical record of past events. While fiction, it's based on many thoughts and considerations on what it would take to make such a trip possible. This documentary is about the voyage of the first humans to leave the Earth-Moon system and fly by another planet. This documentary is about the voyage of Venus 1, the Venus mission in the world of Bellatopia.
Entering the world of Bellatopia, the year 2040.
This is the documentary, Our World in Space.
Hello, and welcome to Our World in Space, the Venus flyby. The Apollo-Venus flyby mission, more formally known at the time as Venus 1. The purpose of this trip was to send two astronauts on a round-trip flyby around the planet Venus. The reason for the trip was to prove that such a trip was possible and that humans could endure a trip of the nearly 7 months in duration that was necessary to accomplish the trip. Planning for the trip started 66 years ago in 1974, 5 years after Neil Armstrong said his historic words on the surface of the moon. This was the next major step. The astronauts of Venus 1 would experience an unprecedented opportunity to perform scientific study of the planet and its biosphere during a high-speed flyby in a gravity-assisted whiplash around the planet. The trip made use of a significant amount of existing Apollo equipment and technology. This was an important requirement for the mission, as the launch window for the trip was extremely tight. A successful launch required a specific alignment of the Earth, the Moon, and Venus. All three had to be in a particular position, all in a proper alignment, in order for the mission to be successful. The first possible launch window was in early November of 1975. The second window would not occur again for nearly 2 years until late July of 1977. It was deemed of significant importance to the United States that the first launch window be made. This would allow the trip to occur and complete in time for the bicentennial celebration in July of 1976. Given all that was going on in the world during this time, the political value of a huge United States success such as this was too good of an opportunity to pass by. The mission's alignment with the celebration is why the mission received its pen name, the Bicentennial Flyby Mission. And Venus was elevated to an almost cult-like status as representative of the nation and all we had accomplished. This was very similar to the position the moon received during the 1960s following JFK's dream. Venus or bust was a not uncommon expression heard during conversations during this time. Less than 22 months were available to complete planning for the mission before the launch window opened. To make that window as little as possible could be changed to the original Apollo equipment in order to make the trip a success. But inevitably, some changes were required. After all, Apollo was designed for trips in the 1 to 3 week range, covering 500,000 miles or so. This trip was going to take the better part of a year, covering well over 60 million miles, some 20 times longer and over 100 times further. The trip was to use an existing Apollo command module, but would use a longer and greatly enhanced service module in order to provide significantly more propellant for extended burns of the service module's engine, the SPS or service propulsion system. This was necessary to make the long duration trip viable. To make the trip endurable for the crew and to provide storage for the additional consumables required by the crew for this lengthy trip, a newly created extended habitation module was created. Based off some of the existing Skylab technology, the habitation module would be attached to the command module at the nose of the ship, much in the same way the lunar module was attached during the trips to the moon. The entire ship was launched by a single enhanced Saturn V rocket, the same rocket that sent Apollo to the moon. The biggest difference, however, was the third stage. This third stage was a modified version of the S-4B third stage that was used to send the Apollo missions to the moon. This Venus 1 mission's third stage, known as the S-4C, was significantly larger and provided additional fuel. This additional fuel was needed after the planned lunar flyby to allow a long-duration burn to assist the ship to acquire the velocity needed to make the trip. But we'll discuss that in more detail later. Mission Overview. Early plans for the mission were to utilize a single burn of the main engine to slow the ship down and let it fall towards the sun until it reaches Venus. At Venus, it would slingshot around until it rises up to meet the Earth again. In principle, this was a sound plan. It had the added benefit that it did not require an engine burn after the initial burn for the entire trip. So even if some problem occurred during the trip, the normal course of Newtonian physics and Venus's gravity would return the ship safely back to Earth. However, the details were not so cooperative. Problem after problem were discovered with this approach. Early in the detailed planning stage, it was decided that a more decisive, directed, and powered approach at a trajectory was required. There would need to be several engine burns during the course of the trip, and this meant more fuel. The mission got a lot more complicated. The final overall mission design that was created was to utilize a lunar gravity assist to increase speed, followed by an extended burn of the third stage S4C engine. Together, these two maneuvers would give the ship the speed necessary to make the trip and align the ship for the Venus rendezvous. The lunar flyby occurred by sending the ship, with the third stage still attached, into a slingshot maneuver around the moon. After the third stage S4C fired to get the ship to the desired speed, it was discarded. All further course corrections and speed changes were the responsibility of the large SPS engine at the rear of the service module of the Apollo capsule. Given the necessary course and speed, there would be a need for two course correction burns on the way from the moon to Venus, and the SPS engine required enough fuel to accomplish these burns. After a quick flyby of Venus, the gravity of Venus would be used to change the direction of the ship and put it on a trajectory back towards Earth. Two additional burns of the service module SPS engine would be required to make necessary mid-course corrections to send the ship back towards Earth. In order to make the scheduled launch window, a significant amount of the Apollo infrastructure had to be reused. New equipment and systems were introduced only where absolutely necessary. The command module was virtually identical to the command module used for the later Apollo lunar missions, the ones used for Apollo 19 and Apollo 20. It was modified to remove the couch for the third astronaut, as only two astronauts were to go on the Venus flyby trip. This gave some additional room in the command module for the two crew members to move about. However, this was not sufficient space to accommodate the two astronauts and all of their consumable resources for the planned 7-month voyage. As such, an extended habitation module was created. This habitation module, created specifically for the Venus flyby trip, was approximately 45 feet long and 15 feet wide. Even here, reuse was front and center. Much of the technology used to create the habitation module was the same technology used to create Skylab, another program that was part of the Apollo Applications Program and leveraging Apollo technology. The habitation module was longer than the height of the lunar lander. It was carried into orbit in a manner similar to the lunar lander in a storage space directly above the S4C third stage of the Saturn V rocket. During the majority of the 7-month journey, the habitation module was docked to the nose of the command module, identical to the way the lunar lander was docked to the command module during the Apollo moon missions. The habitation module, along with the modified command module, provided the living quarters and consumable storage for the astronauts during the trip. During the lunar missions, the three astronaut crew shared a total 370 cubic feet of space during most of the flight. This included space in both the command module and the lunar lander. During the Venus flyby, the two astronaut crews shared 4,500 cubic feet in the combined command module and extended habitation module. This was over 10 times the space available during the moon missions, over 18 times the space per person than the astronauts had on the way to the moon. This space provided sufficient room and storage space necessary for their 7-month journey. The first and second stage of the Saturn V rocket that lifted the ship into space were nearly identical to those used during the moon trips. The third stage, though, was 35% taller and provided additional fuel that was necessary. In the moon trips, the S-4B third stage was used for the trans-lunar injection burn. The TLI burn is what sent the spacecraft out of low Earth orbit and into a trajectory towards the moon. For the Venus 1 mission, the S-4C third stage was used for the TLI burn, send the spacecraft towards the lunar flyby, but it was then used for a second burn, the trans-Venus injection burn. This TVI burn, which occurred after the lunar flyby, gave the ship the additional required velocity to send the spacecraft on a trajectory towards the rendezvous with Venus. This meant that, unlike the Apollo lunar voyages, the third stage remained attached to the ship all the way to and past the moon. The service module was a greatly enhanced service module. The original service module was about 15 feet long without the SPS engine attached at the back. The service module used for the Venus flyby was 25 feet long, 10 feet longer, and contained an additional 65% space for additional power for the ship and fuel for the main SPS engine. The SPS engine itself was identical to the main engine used during Apollo flights. Even though the engine would be used for substantially more burns and longer burns over the course of the trip, the engine was considered robust enough to provide for those needs, provided enough fuel was available. The engine was a highly reliable piece of Apollo technology that had proved itself over and over again in many flights during the course of the Apollo lunar program. This engine would prove to be a critical component whose reliability would be later questioned as risk the success of the mission. But of course, that's a story for later. Launch window. The 7-month mission had only a 3-day launch window available early in November of 1975. Significant additional funding was given to the program and substantial schedule pressure was applied to keep the program on track in order to make the first launch window possible. Failure to make this launch window would mean a nearly 2-year delay for the trip. The first day of the window was a no-go due to weather. The second day, however, was good to go. On November 3rd, 1975, Commander David Mason and pilot James Ahmed boarded the top of the enhanced and taller Saturn V rocket and entered the command module for the nearly 7-month voyage of Venus 1. The crew. The mission commander, David Mason, was a 34-year-old Navy pilot from Seattle, Washington, with nearly 4 years in the astronaut program. His pilot, James Ahmed, was a 31-year-old civilian Air Force pilot from Denver, Colorado. This was the first mission for both astronauts. The perceived lack of experience of the two astronauts was debated in the public at the time their selection was announced and was considered a concern by the mainstream media of the day. However, NASA stood by the decision as both Mason and Ahmed were experienced test pilots and, most importantly, both were single. This was considered important in order to make the prolonged trip more viable. The launch. On launch day, with a 2-man crew aboard the Venus 1 spacecraft, the launch was a success. The launch occurred at 09:15 hours on November 3rd, 1975. The crowd at the Cape for the launch was as great as it was for Apollo 11. The launch, while uneventful, was an even greater awe-inspiring event as previous Apollo launches, given the larger size of the vessel atop the Saturn V rocket. The launch was flawless. After a 9-plus-hour evaluation and ship readiness test that occurred in Earth orbit, the S4C, third stage of the Saturn V rocket, fired for the TLI, or translunar injection burn. This burn occurred at 1930 hours and sent the ship on its mission towards its first rendezvous, a rendezvous with the lunar gravity assist with the moon. The first leg of the trip was a short 3-day trip to the moon for the first lunar flyby. During these 3 days, the ship stayed in its current launch configuration. This configuration consisted of the third stage S4C of the Saturn V rocket, which was attached to the storage compartment of the still launch stored habitation module. Next came the service module and finally the command module. During these 4 days, nothing was attached to the front of the command module. The crew was therefore restricted to remain in the vastly limited space of the command module. But this would only last for a bit over 3 days. The Lunar Gravity Assist flyby occurred on November 7, 1975, T plus 4 days into the trip. The ship was greatly accelerated and started the second leg of its trip towards Venus. In an instant, immediately after the lunar flyby and gravity assist was complete, the crew of Venus 1 had set 2 records. First, they instantly became the fastest humans in history, passing any previous speed record set by previous Apollo astronauts. Second, they moved further from the Earth than any other human had ever traveled, having passed outside of the sphere of lunar orbit. They had now left the Earth-Moon system for the first time in human history. The crew would hold these records for many years to come. Not long after the Lunar Gravity Assist flyby, the third stage fired again for its longest and strongest burn. This burn was called the Trans-Venus Injection Burn. TVI burn gave the ship additional velocity beyond that of the lunar assist. The ship was now falling away from the Earth-Moon system and falling towards the sun in the ship's planned 93-day journey to rendezvous with the planet Venus. In just 3 months, the crew of Venus 1 would become the first humans to fly by another planet. The ship was now traveling at a speed relative to Earth of around 10,250 miles per hour. The ship would accelerate a bit more on the trip, spiraling towards Venus until it reached its high speed of 12,840 miles per hour relative to the Earth. This is almost 4 times faster than the Apollo traveled on the way from the Earth to the Moon. There was a bit more work that had to occur after the TVI burn, before the crew could settle in for their long voyage ahead. The command service module undocked from the S4C third stage. The CSM turned around and docked with the still stowed habitation module. The habitation module was attached to the CSM and the pair backed up to remove the habitation module from the third stage storage bay. One more flip around, then a short burn of the now available SPS engine on the service module sent the ship on a trajectory away from the spent third stage. The empty third stage floated away towards its destiny, which was the center of the solar system and a fiery death into the sun. The S4C's job was complete, and it completed its job flawlessly. The crew now had access to the entire living space of the command module and the habitation module. They deployed solar panels from the habitation module for additional power, and they deployed a large communications dish for high bandwidth communications back to Earth. Once these things were complete, the crew settled in. It wasn't long before a routine schedule was achieved. The command module was at the bridge of their ship, where they worked to perform navigation-related activities. The habitation module is where they lived, slept, ate, exercised, and performed scientific experiments. It would be 3 months until they reached Venus. It should be an uneventful 3 months. That was not to be, however. The crisis. While the trip to Venus involved coasting most of the way, there was the need for 2 Venus Assist burns. These burns were called VAB1 and VAB-2. These burns were planned to be executed by the SPS engine and the service module. The first burn occurred on November 26, 1975, the day before Thanksgiving Day. That burn went off without a hitch. All was well. However, when VAB-2, scheduled to occur on December 22, 1975, was about to begin, a power glitch in the service module caused the engine to fail. The result was that the burn partially occurred, but did not complete correctly. It was only at about 5% of the necessary power, and the burn only lasted for approximately 12 seconds of the planned 73-second duration. The result was Venus 1 was now off course, on an incorrect course, and would completely miss the window for the Venus Rendezvous. Missing the Venus Rendezvous meant the ship could not reverse its course after a flyby for its return trip to Earth. Instead, the ship would continue on its way away from the Earth and towards the Sun. The ship was suddenly in jeopardy of being lost in space. If a solution could not be found, Venus 1 was destined to enter a slow orbit around the Sun and ultimately burn up in its descent. The astronauts, however, would not be around when their ship burned up. Because the burn up would not occur for nearly 2 years, long after the astronauts succumbed due to the lack of oxygen, the Venus 1 spacecraft would be their speeding coffin that would ultimately be cremated in the Sun. A solution had to be found, and had to be found soon. The following day, December 23rd, the problem that caused the original electrical glitch and the failure of the SPS engine was identified. Engineers at Mission Control found the problem, and the astronauts were able to make the necessary fixes. This problem was resolved and would not endanger the further use of the engine for future burns. In other words, the SPS engine itself was okay and could continue to be used. That was the good news. The bad news was, due to the nature of the incorrect course the ship was now on, it was unclear that a new burn could be performed that would correct the mistake and put the ship back on course to the Venus flyby. It was still unclear the ship could be saved. For over 2 days, scientists and NASA worked on the problem while the at-home public stayed glued to their TV sets, waiting to see if the astronauts were doomed or not. It wasn't until December 25th, 1975, Christmas Day, that a resolution was found and a burn was calculated that would save the mission and save the astronauts. Given the day the resolution was discovered, the new burn was nicknamed by the media the Christmas Miracle, and a miracle it was. Eight days after the problem first occurred, on December 29th, 1975, the adjusted burn occurred, the course was corrected, and the ship was considered out of danger. The Christmas miracle was successful. On December 30th, 1975, the editors of Time magazine officially declared the Men of Mission Control Houston to be the Time Magazine Men of the Year. This honor was bestowed them due to their tireless efforts to find a solution to the crisis and save the mission and the astronauts. Venus 1 was back on course and on its way to its rendezvous with Venus. There were a couple side effects of the Christmas miracle, however. First, the flyby would occur in a different alignment and the flyby would be faster. Therefore, the amount of scientific study that could be performed during the flyby itself was somewhat reduced. Second, the updated trajectory added a total of about 15 days to the overall trip, meaning the total mission time would be 210 days rather than the planned 195 days. The crew had enough expendables for the extra days, but it would eat into their reserves. The crew would now return home May 31st, 1976. This would fortunately still be in time for the bicentennial celebration. Those issues were minor inconveniences, however. The ship was saved, The crew was saved. The mission was saved. The Christmas miracle was truly a miracle.
This is the end of the documentary, Our World in Space.
Brought to you straight from the year 2040.
We now return you to the present day.
This is the end of part one of the Venus flyby mission. In the next episode, we will continue the mock documentary with the rest of the mission after the Christmas miracle. This will include the flyby and the trip back home, and the unprecedented, never-before-attempted process of slowing down a ship traveling at over 10,000 miles per hour to a safe speed for Earth re-entry. Stay tuned. But while you're waiting for part two, come take a look at our website. On the website, we have diagrams of what the Venus 1 ship looked like, along with the course and mission plan details for the Venus 1 journey. If you enjoyed learning about this voyage, you'll appreciate this mission information on the website. Please go to bellotopia.com/Venus. That's bellotopia.com/VENUS.
On the next episode of Bellotopia.
The Venus flyby mission was part of the Apollo Applications Program. It was an important mission to the morale of the United States around its bicentennial celebration. It was as big of an event as the original Apollo 11 moon landing. But as we learned in part one, it was not without its hazards and problems. In part two, we will talk about the actual flyby itself, the return home, and the unprecedented and untested multi-pass, 2+ week trip around the Earth-Moon system in order to slow the ship down enough for a safe re-entry. We'll also learn what became of the rest of the planned Venus flyby missions, the fate of the proposed Apollo-based Mars flyby, and the doomed end to the program. Coming up, the Venus flyby mission, part two, and the next Bellotopia.
And this season of Bellotopia.
What if the early space program was fully funded, fully supported, and ultimately financially viable?
This is the Space Race.
This season on Bellotopia.
Are you enjoying our vision of the world of Bellotopia? For more information, please check out our website at bellotopia.com. That's bellotopia.com. Until next time, enjoy our world.